Have you ever been tempted to give up or check out in your walk with God? Have you been at a place in life's journey where you felt overwhelmed and overshadowed by life's obstacles, setbacks, or heartaches? It could be you're at such a place right now, a place where you are hungering for hope. If so, then Hope Along the Journey podcast is a ministry of encouragement created specifically with you and others just like you in mind. And now, here is your host, Mark Cravens, to share a word of encouragement with you today.
Thank you so much for joining us today for this episode of Hope Along the Journey. Hi, I'm Mark Cravens, and I'm your podcast host. And we welcome you to this episode as we share with you a message of encouragement and inspiration and hope. Today we have with us as our guest by way of Zoom, none other than Evie Shirey. Evie, welcome to today's episode of Hope Along the Journey.
Thank you, Mark. It's my privilege to be here today.
That's great. All the way out in Pennsylvania. What town again is it in Pennsylvania you're in?
Middleburg.
Middleburg, Pennsylvania. Well, we're glad that you're with us today, and we want you to be able to share your story with our listening audience here in just a few minutes. But before we do that, I just would like to share with you, my friends, my appreciation for you listening to Hope Along the Journey and your support and prayers. It means so very, very much. If you would, go to our website and sign up for our newsletter. We just sent one out for the month of August, and we'll be sending one out in September. When you go to the website, there will be a pop-up screen that'll say Stay in Touch, and that's what we want to do is stay in touch with you. So if you will just give us your email address, we'll put you on the newsletter. That website is www.hopealongthejourney.org. Again, that's www.hopealongthejourney.org. Also, you can connect with us through Facebook and Instagram if you'll look us up. We'd love to be in touch with you through our social media. Or you can connect with me if you have a LinkedIn profile. I'm available to be connected with on LinkedIn. Just look Mark L. Cravens up, and I would love to connect with you. Send us an email at hopealongthejourney@gmail.com. Let us know that you're listening. Let us know if there's a topic you would like for us to talk about on one of these episodes. We would just dearly love to hear from you. And now back to our guest today, Evie Shirey there in Pennsylvania. Let me just tell you a little bit about Evie. She is a widowed single mom of two children, ages 21 and 17. She was born and raised in Michigan, we won't hold that against her, in a country setting, living in Ohio. You know, there's this thing about Ohio and Michigan, right? You know, Evie accepted Jesus into her heart at the ripe old age of 6 years of age, and since that time, she's always had a desire to serve Jesus. When she went to college, she attended Penview Bible Institute in Penns Creek, Pennsylvania, where she ultimately met her husband-to-be. They would be wed and married and pastor five different churches, covering a span of 20 years. So again, Evie, welcome to today's episode of Hope Along the Journey.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Oh, I'm just so delighted you're doing this today, and I'm glad Zane is there, your son, helping you out with all of the technology. That's great. Yes. These younger people know so much more about this stuff.
I know. Yeah. I'm so grateful to have him because he's helped his mom in so many ways.
I'm sure he's a tremendous blessing. Well, share with us a little bit more about yourself or some of your hobbies, and maybe even a little known fact about your life.
Okay. Well, my bio said, I am a mom of two great kids. And so a lot of my days are, you know, spending time with them, doing things with them. I am the oldest of five. And so growing up in Michigan, we, of course, grew up in the country. Mm-hmm. So we did all the country things. My dad was a farmer. He was a huge gardener.
Okay.
And so we would, a lot of times in the summertime, find ourselves in the garden picking green beans and, you know, doing all those garden things.
Hoeing the garden, right?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
I hated to hoe the garden.
All that fun stuff.
Yeah.
My mom was a canner, so we were in the kitchen canning, just all those things growing up. So I had a very good childhood, fun childhood. Mm-hmm. One of the fun, I guess the fun facts that, when people hear my name, mm-hmm. If you're familiar with the singer, Evie Turnquist was her name. Mm-hmm. She was very famous back in the 70s when I was born.
Yes.
And, so my parents loved her singing and just thought she had a beautiful voice. And so when their first daughter was born, they decided that her name would be Evie as well. Mm-hmm. So I am named after the singer, Evie.
That's neat. And we talked about this even before we started the recording today, and that was that she was, of course, I was born in the 60s, grew up in the 70s, mm-hmm. so she was extremely popular, mm-hmm. especially her Christmas album. I can remember listening to that music. Some of the other mm-hmm. things you like to do is you're great with decorating. Tell us a little bit about mm-hmm. your love for decorating and some of those other things that you really enjoy doing.
Well, I would say ever since I was young, I loved to just make a room or, you know, a house just pretty mm-hmm. and inviting. And so that just grew as I grew. And so anytime that there is an opportunity for me to be involved in decorating, whether that's a home, someone asking me to come and help them with something in their home or an event, I'm more than willing to be available to help. I just enjoy that part of it. And my husband would always say, you know, he had a very hard time visualizing, you know, anything, but he would love and bless his heart. He would, and this is partly what I just loved about him. He would go into Hobby Lobby with me and just enjoy watching me because I can visualize what I want, you know, what I can see what I want and how I want to put it together. He could not, but he enjoyed seeing me.
God bless the men who can go with their wives in Hobby Lobby. That just, to me, that is just one mark in your favor if you can do that. Now, you know, Bed Bath & Beyond or, you know, or some of those other places, that might be a little bit different, but that's great.
Right, right.
And you enjoy a good cup of coffee, but I found out in talking to you that you don't really drink coffee, do you, Evie?
No, I can drink if it is a good coffee, you know, good tasting coffee. I can drink it black, but I would much rather have some flavored creamer in it.
Yeah, you're like my wife and daughters. They love all those creamers. Well, let's talk a little bit about you and Mike and how you're about your courtship and how you guys met and came together.
Mm-hmm. Well, he actually. Well, let's just go back. I growing up in Michigan, there was a Bible college in Pennsylvania mm-hmm. that would, they would have singing groups that would tour in the summertime mm-hmm. and go to different churches and different places to, promote their college. Mm-hmm. And so this particular college, came from Pennsylvania, so I got to know the college and, decided to go check it out with my family. And, so they have what they call Welcome Week, where they invite, prospective students to come in and check out the college and see if this is something that, you know, we would like to attend. Mm-hmm. And so, we made that trip from Michigan to Pennsylvania. And I love to tell this part. When they were doing Welcome Week, they don't do this now at the college, but back when I attended there, they would put on plays mm-hmm. for the prospective students. Right. And it might be a play about some missionary's life, mm-hmm. or, you know, something along that line. Well, my husband-to-be, Mike, was in that play that year, and he tells the story of when he was up on stage getting, checking sound check, doing all that stuff, making sure they were ready to go. And he saw our family walk in, and he saw me, and the thought popped into his head, now there's a girl I could marry.
Oh, wow.
And so I had no idea, you know.
That would be a little scary if he just walked up to you afterwards right. and say, hey, I just want to tell you what went through my mind when you right. walked in the room. Yeah.
But that was his initial thought when he saw me. And so, you know, we did have some conversation. We did talk. I remember his sister being there, and I was introduced to her. And but that's about all that it came to be as far as our initial meeting. He recruited me to go there, and I came the next year. However, he was not there. He went on to another Bible college in Indiana. Mm-hmm. He had done 2 years there in Pennsylvania and just felt like God was leading him to this college in Indiana. Mm-hmm. He was in the ministerial department. He actually finished his last 2 years there in Indiana. So I can remember, I wrote his sister maybe a couple times. That's back when we were still writing letters.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And you had envelopes and stamps yes. and all that. Yeah, okay. Some yes. people don't understand that. Gotcha, okay.
And I, you know, had sent her a picture myself, and Mike tells about how he remembers seeing that picture and, you know, that the interest was there on his end. However, he did nothing to reach out to me at that point in time. And we talk about and look back that we just feel like it was God's leading. It was not the right timing mm-hmm. for us to be together. And right. He did finish, graduated, and he went on down to Alabama to pastor mm-hmm. His first church. And so from the time that we initially met to the time that we really re-met and started dating was 5 years. It was 5 years in there, wow. and we really had no contact with each other, no connection. He would tell you that he can remember different times thinking, I wonder what happened to that Evie girl, mm-hmm. and thinking, oh, she's probably married with a family by now. And so both of us in that period of time dated. He actually was engaged to a girl. And that fell through. And so about 5 to 6 months before we reconnected, we found out later, both of us at around the same time, I was in a camp meeting in Florida in January. And he, again, was in Alabama. But about the same time, we both prayed. And said, and because neither one of us at that time was dating and really didn't have any prospects out there. And we're both in our 20s. And but we both prayed and said, Lord, if you're going to send someone into our lives, mm-hmm. you're going to have to do it.
Right.
We give right. it to you mm-hmm. and really just surrendered it to the Lord. It was about 5 months later. He was planning to bring a group of young people to the Bible college there in Pennsylvania mm-hmm. that we both had attended. I had attended Pennview there, and then I went on back home. I did not finish. I didn't graduate, but I was there for about a year and a half, and then I went back home and was working. And I wanted to go back to Pennsylvania just to visit my friends. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, you know what? That would just be a good time to do it is during Welcome Week. And so we both ended up there at the same time, not knowing that we would be,
that is,
you know,
so
either
cool.
one of us would be
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
So that's where he's like, when he saw me, and I did remember him to a point. Mm-hmm. He very much remembered me, and he's like, "Oh, that's Effie."
Yeah, good for him, right?
So, yeah, and so there it led to kind of a he tried to talk to me at different points in time during that weekend. Was not successful. He would tell you that I was just I had my posse of friends, and he just could not get to me. Where he could just talk to me personally.
Right.
And so it came down to the very last night, and it was getting late, and he had tried numerous times to talk to me, and it was not working. And he had walked into the dining room, dining hall there, and he just said a very short prayer. He said, "Lord, I have to go to bed. I'm headed back to Alabama in the morning. If you want me to talk to this girl, you're going to have to send her in here." And wouldn't you know, a few minutes later, I walk in the door.
Yeah.
And I was headed for a drink of water. Mm-hmm. And he immediately came over to me. We started talking. And it was like just talking to an old friend. Mm-hmm. We just hit it off immediately. And by the end of the night, he had my phone number and my
good man. Yeah. Good man. Yeah. He made his move, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Oh, neat.
And so then it was pretty much a whirlwind. That was May. And of course, we did a lot of dating over the phone because I'm in Michigan. He's in Alabama.
Right.
And so we actually started our dating over the phone. By July, we were engaged. And then by December, we were married.
Oh, that's so great. What a wonderful story of how God led your lives together. Well, you guys, then you joined him down there in Alabama. Was that where you joined him? Or had he moved by that time to another pastorate?
He actually, when we started dating, he felt that he needed to resign his church, and he actually resigned and moved to Pennsylvania right there at the college, and actually started teaching. He is a huge history buff.
Yes.
He knows his history, and so he actually taught in the high school there, was teaching history.
That's neat.
I moved as well to be closer to him before we actually were married. Mm-hmm. And so we had a couple, 3 months there together before we were married. And we actually had the wedding there in Pennsylvania.
Oh, that's great.
Michigan. So
that's great.
Yeah.
And then you spent 20 years together in ministry.
Mm-hmm.
You have any high points or anything from those years of ministry that stand out to you, or just in general, as you look back on those years together, what were they like?
They were good years. And they were frustrating years,
yes.
And they were challenging years.
It's pastoring, you know? Right?
Yes,
absolutely.
Yes, yes.
It has its highs and lows, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. But, you know, I can truly testify that, you know, God was with us in every,
yes.
in every pastorate, in every circumstance. And, probably one of the most, probably one of the stories that stands out the most to me is we were pastoring in Ohio, and, we had, as a church, we had decided around Valentine's Day to hand out roses in the community.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then we put a little tag with it, with our church, and just saying how that we care about you, we love you.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it came, the day came to pass these roses out, however, Some of the people from the church who were going to help us, something came up. I think there was an emergency in one family, and it basically ended up where there was going to be nobody that was going to be able to help us. Mm-hmm. I was working a job, and so I had to work that day. So it ended up being my husband and my daughter going door to door, handing these roses mm-hmm. out that day. And so in their minds, you know, it, because of all the frustration of nobody, you know, being able to help and just, you know, really, Lord, is there going to be anything that comes of this? But we're going to do it. And so they knocked on a certain door there, and this lady lived very close to the church. Mm-hmm. And they handed her the rose, and it, unknown to Mike and Evie, this lady was going through some very difficult, a very difficult stage in her life. And just simply giving that rose touched her deeply. And because of that, she came to the church. Mm-hmm. And we saw this lady go from just with all her struggles and all that she was going through, become this joyful person who wanted to serve Jesus.
Amen. That's a wonderful
story. It just, mm-hmm. I know it just encouraged Mike so much to see her just bloom and blossom. And, so that is probably one of the most, memorable things that I will never forget.
That's a beautiful story. And I've heard the lady share that story personally. Mm-hmm. And what a wonderful story that is of mm-hmm. God's love and grace. But unfortunately, within a short amount of time, something called COVID would come along.
Yes.
And unfortunately, Mike would become ill. Mm-hmm. And I know this is a painful chapter in your life, Evie, but can you tell us some about Mike's illness and then about his passing?
Mm-hmm. Well, we had decided to take a trip out west, mm-hmm. and for my daughter had graduated from high school, and this was her a special trip for her. And so we started on that trip. And it wasn't long into that trip, and Mike became sick. Mm-hmm. It wasn't unusual for him. He has always been, if somebody's going to get sick, it's going to be Mike.
Yeah.
Ever since he was a young boy, that was his mom would say, if anybody's going to get sick, it's going to be him. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, over our marriage, you know, there would be many times where he would come down with something. And so, you know, I just thought, okay, this is just another one of those times. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, he's not feeling well, he's sick. But we'll get through this. And, well, then I became sick, and my two kids, we all came down with this. However, a couple days in, I was feeling better. My children were feeling better, but Mike was not. And I, at one point, he was desperately trying to, continue the trip, mm-hmm. even though he wasn't feeling well. He knew this was important to our family, and this is just the kind of guy he was. He just, would sacrifice how he felt and, mm-hmm. to just try to be pleasing to his family and to mm-hmm. give them the fun that they, you know, he knew that they wanted. Mm-hmm. And so he held out but however, the longer the trip went, I just felt like, you know, you really probably should get into an urgent care. Mm-hmm. So he finally obliged. We went to an urgent care and, however they, at that time, they would not let us go in. You know, talking over the phone to them,
right.
mm-hmm. and they said it was going to be about an hour wait. and we would have to sit there in our vehicle and wait it out. So I looked at him and I said, I'm leaving that up to you. Do you, you know, if you want to wait to be seen, then we'll wait. If you want to just, at that time, we were getting ready to head home. Mm-hmm. We were in Idaho. So we were a long way from home.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And he looked at me and he said, let's just go. Let's just go home. He just wanted to get home. He was feeling pretty rotten. So I said, okay. And so we started to make the journey home. However, he was so bad at this time, at this point, that we could only travel for about 6 hours and we had to stop. So it took us an extra day to get home. Mm-hmm. Right. But we did. We made it home. And I, at different times, would comment to him and said, you know, please, would you just go into the urgent care and get seen? I just felt like he needed that, but he kept putting it off. And I think in his mind, he probably was thinking, you know, I can battle through this,
right?
And I can get through this. Mm-hmm. And he would comment that he just didn't want to have to sit in the emergency room for hours waiting to be seen. And, you know, he just felt too miserable to do that. And so he'd rather just stay at home and try to get over this. And so I said, okay. I didn't sense that he was having a hard time breathing. Mm-hmm. We did go and get a COVID test. We went to a local place where they do testing. Mm-hmm. However, they send the test in. You have to wait for several days to get the results. But we were pretty sure by this time that he had COVID. He just continually was getting weaker and weaker. He had no appetite. He didn't want to eat. So I was trying to get just some Ensure down him, something to,
right. Sure.
Mm-hmm. that would. And it got to the point where he would just, we had, and our bedroom was upstairs at that time. And it came to the point where he wouldn't even go downstairs. He would stay in our bedroom because he was so weak. Mm-hmm. The night before he finally said, okay, I'll go in. At that point, I didn't sense still that he was really struggling breathing. But that night, he just to go to the bathroom, from the bathroom to our bed, which was not far at all, he was completely out of breath. And at that point, I begged him and I said, please, would you let me take you in? And he said, he was a stubborn man.
Most men aren't they?
Yeah. He said, let's wait till morning. And so we did. We waited till morning. And at that point, I was in tears. And I said, there's nothing more I can do for you. Please let me take you in. And so he said, okay. And he was so weak that he couldn't even put on his shoes. I had to help him put on his shoes, get him ready, try to get him down the stairs. Into the vehicle. I had my children help me. And we made it into the vehicle to the emergency room. We wheeled him in and I told him, I said, I'm going to be right back. I need to park our vehicle and I'll be right back. Just from the time that I parked the vehicle and got back in, they had something on his finger. They were testing his oxygen. Mm-hmm. At that time, I didn't know what it was, but it was beeping like crazy. It was mm-hmm. going off like crazy. And almost immediately they whisked him back into where they, you know, take all the patients. We didn't even wait in the waiting room. I will never to this day, forget the feeling I had. Of seeing him being taken back immediately. And they told me, ma'am, you can't go back there with him. You either can wait in your vehicle or you can go home and we'll give you a call. And I felt like I utterly had abandoned him at yes. that time. Mm-hmm. But I had no choice but right. to say, okay.
That's right.
And so I found out that his oxygen was down in the 60s. It's supposed to be in the very high 90s.
Right. That's right.
So that's why they whisked him away as fast as they did. They had to get him on oxygen immediately. So I can remember calling my family mm-hmm. and saying, you know, pray. I am very concerned. And I went home and waited. And thankfully, he was able to do some texting. So he was able to communicate with me as to what was going on. But the very hard to be away from him and not knowing, you know, what all was going down. They, of course, put him in the ICU, intensive care, immediately, and had him on oxygen. That was a Saturday that I had taken him in. Sunday and Monday, he was doing fairly well with his breathing, just having the oxygen mask on. However, I was in contact with the doctors and nurses and just constantly trying to figure out what's going on. You know, how's he doing? Are sure. they, you know, trying to make sure, you know, I basically felt, you know, I'm his advocate. I'm his, you right. know, the one that needs to
And you
fight
couldn't
for
be
him.
There. And you couldn't be there.
And I couldn't be there. Right. No. Mm-hmm. So that was very difficult. Well, I think that the doctors and nurses were getting a little tired of me. And I probably was annoying. Looking back on it, I probably was a little annoying to them.
Yeah, but that was awful during that period of time. And yeah. I've talked to numbers of people
yeah.
whose loved one was whisked in. And like you said, and yeah. you can't go in there and you have yeah. no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, and yet you have to advocate for them because they're so sick.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So challenging.
Yeah. So because of that, I had a long talk. And I will give credit to the doctor. He spent time with me on the phone that he would not have had to spend, trying to explain to me the severity of Mike and where he was at. And I had expressed to him my frustration that I could not be there with him. I couldn't discuss things with him. Because here was the thing. They called me, I believe it was on Monday, they called me and said, his oxygen has gone down in the 80s. We want to put him on the ventilator. And I, at that point, did not feel like he needed to be on the ventilator yet. And of mm-hmm. course, you know, there was all that fear of,
right.
you know,
yes.
of your family going on the ventilator, not coming off. And so, of course, that's in the back of my mind. We had a dear friend that had just passed away mm-hmm. not too long ago, you know, that, you know, was all fresh in our mind. And so I said no. And I was very firm with the doctor. I said, no, I do not want you to put him on the ventilator yet. And I knew that I only had a short window of opportunity here because I knew that his oxygen couldn't stay in the 80s,
right,
that they,
right.
you know. Mm-hmm. But when I told the doctor that I did not want this, and I had called Mike and I said, please do not let them put you on the ventilator. Well, Mike thought I was saying that I absolutely did not want him to go on the ventilator at all at any time, that basically he would have to be, you know, coding before I would say, okay, you know, let's put the ventilator on it. And that's not at all what I was saying. I just didn't mm-hmm. feel like it was time yet.
Right, right.
But because of all that miscommunication, he had told the doctor, no, I don't want to be put on the ventilator at all unless I'm, you know, I'm about to pass and there's nothing else you can do. Well, I didn't want that. You know, I didn't want it to come to that.
Right.
So because of all this miscommunication, I was expressing my frustration to the doctor about this, that I can't be in there to talk to Mike and to, you know, us be able to talk things over
and,
you know, what do we want and, you know, decisions that need to be made. And so because of that, he allowed me to go in Monday night, which was not allowed. The only visiting day was on Wednesdays that they were allowing family to go in to be with their loved ones. And so this was a special allowance that he was allowing for me to go in. I believe to this day it was God who gave me one last opportunity to be with my husband. Because unknown to me, that would be the last time that we would have a conversation. Had I known that, I would have stayed longer. But you don't know those things.
No, you don't know those things. No, Abby, you don't.
And so I've had to give that to the Lord and just am grateful that I had that opportunity. And we had talked about what he wanted, you know, if those decisions need to be made. And so I went home Tuesday morning. He seemed to be doing okay. And then about noon, they called me and they said his oxygen has dipped down again. I think it was 70s, 80s again. He is struggling. He is asking to be put on the ventilator. And I had told him that Monday night, I said, look, I'm leaving that up to you to decide when you feel you need the, if you need the ventilator. And so when I found out that he was requesting it, I still was fighting a little bit. I said, could you please try to get his oxygen before you, his oxygen back up before you put that ventilator on? And they said, ma'am, he's asking for it. And I said, okay, if he's asking for it, then go ahead. What I'm about to say, I believe, was another God thing, and it was a gift to me. The nurse did not hang up the phone, and I could hear them working. And at one point, I don't know, even know what I said, I don't remember, but I said something, and the nurse realized, oh, she's still on the phone. Mm-hmm. And she said, I thought I had hung this up, and she said, you know, this, I knew they were getting about ready to put him on the ventilator. And Mike spoke up and said something. I couldn't hear what he said, but the nurse said, he said to tell you he loves you. That was the last
I love you that you heard from him.
Yes. But it was very much a gift.
Sure. Absolutely.
And very thankful for that gift. He was put on the ventilator and about, I guess it was about not quite a week later. They basically, I had to make the decision. His kidneys and liver, they were failing, and he was going downhill pretty fast. And I had to make the decision of, do I continue to fight this and see if he can pull through this? Or do I just let let them take him off of everything that was, you know, keeping him alive at this point? That's a very hard decision.
Oh, I cannot imagine. Yeah. Yeah.
And I can remember standing beside his bedside and saying, Lord, what do I do? Up to this point, I had fought and I had believed and I had trusted the Lord for his healing. But I also knew that this is, Lord, your will be done. Mm-hmm. Your will right. be done. And so I just prayed a quick prayer and I said, Lord, what do I do? Do I continue to fight this and fight for him? Or do I surrender this to you? And I felt very clearly the Lord tell me, surrender him to me. Mm-hmm. And so I did. And I told the doctors, I said, you can take him off the meds and all that. It was keeping him going at that point. And so it wasn't long, and he passed away.
Yeah. What was that date that he passed away? It's
October 6th, 2021.
Yeah, I was getting ready to say we're not far from that anniversary coming up here shortly. Wow. Well, Mike was my friend, and Mike was loved by so many people. But I can't imagine for you and for the kids how painful and traumatic this has been for you. Before we wrap up today's episode, though, I'd like for you to just kind of share with us maybe what have been some ways that God has worked since this time, or promises you have clung to, or how you've seen God prove himself to you through this time over these last couple of years?
You know, Mark, God has been so good to me. And I can't express enough, and I tell it everywhere I go. Yes, I've had some question marks. Mm-hmm. And yes, I've wondered, you know, maybe if I'd have done this or if I'd have done that, that maybe we'd had a better outcome, mm-hmm. different outcome. And yet, my relationship with God, and I'm thankful that my relationship with God was where it was.
Absolutely.
Because I knew without a shadow of a doubt that I could trust my Heavenly Father.
Amen.
Even though I didn't understand why all that was, you know, why this would even happen. Mm-hmm. You know, I never dreamed I'd be a widow at 46 years of age.
No.
And yet, through it all, God has been so good and so faithful to us.
Yes.
And he has proved it in so many ways between, I have an awesome family that just rallied around us. I don't know what I would have done without my family, being by my side from the very moment that he passed away to now. They've just been, tremendous. I also, the conference that we were a part of, in pastoring, came around me in such a way that I just felt like I was just being, I guess the word would be, I just felt a huge hug from all of them and how they came around me and supported me. Mm-hmm. Many of the churches gave financially, and it wasn't just small offerings. It was big offerings. And I just felt their love and their support as well. And that was so, so important to me at that time,
absolutely.
Just having that support. Mm-hmm. But I guess, and especially this year, the Lord, had given me a couple verses that I have just been clinging to. And, you know, you don't know when all of this, you know, Mike was my support. the one that I leaned on heavily.
Right.
And,
sure.
And here now, all of a sudden I find myself, I don't have my support. I don't have the person, my best friend is no longer here. What in the world am I going to do? I have two kids that I'm still trying to raise and you know, help them through their grief, and
right.
I'm going through my own grief. And So all these challenges of, and then immediately, because of pastoring, we could not stay where we were staying. We couldn't, no longer. And so I had to immediately, they say, you know, you don't make big decisions, you know, in that first year of grieving. Well, I made all kinds of big decisions.
You had to,
because
right.
I had to. So we, you know, we were in the middle of immediately packing and moving here to Pennsylvania to be closer to my family. Mm-hmm. And, but in the midst of all that, God just in big and little ways, just put people in my pathway all the way to help me through.
Yeah.
And, but here, here recently, or in this past year, we've had some challenges. My children still are very much grieving, mm-hmm. and had some challenges with my son and in helping him through that grieving process.
Right.
And and God gave me a couple verses, and one was, "Be still and know that I am God."
Amen. Yes.
And over and over, I have seen that, whether I might see it on a wall somewhere, or I might be scrolling through Facebook, and all of a sudden that verse just pops up out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like over and over, God reminds me, Evie, I'm here.
Yes.
Be still.
Right.
Trust me.
Amen.
And, there's another verse that has become meaningful to me, and that is, "Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added to you."
Yes.
And I don't know what the future holds, but I know that if I put God first and seek him with all my heart, that all these other things are going to fall into place. Yes.
That's right.
And they have over and over. God has supplied, and God has helped, and God is working in our family and with my children, and bringing that healing.
That's wonderful.
So, yes,
well, he's faithful. God is truly faithful, isn't he, even in the times of tragedy and loss?
Yes.
And Evie, I so appreciate you taking the time today to share your story. I know it's not easy to share, but I deeply appreciate it, and I know that there are going to be listeners who are going to hear this that are going to be encouraged to know that God is going to be there even through times of grief and loss. Thank you again for being on the podcast.
Thank you, Mark. It's my privilege.
And thank you, listeners, for joining us and being with us today. As I always say and mean from the very depths of my heart, Jesus Christ is truly the hope of the world. If you will only look to him, he'll help you find hope along the journey. God bless you.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. If you would like to know more about Hope Along the Journey, or if you would like to make a donation to show your support and appreciation for this ministry, then visit our website at hopealongthejourney.org. You can also follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Thanks again for listening, and we hope you'll join us again for more Hope Along the Journey.